This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR Hollowell.
Thank you all for being here. It was very moving for me, those 10 minutes of sitting with you. Wow. And I'd also like to thank you all for all the messages, all of the thoughts, love, presence that you manifested during these weeks. It was a great support for me. I don't even really know how to explain how much of a support it was. Really touched my heart and filled me with strength that I didn't have much of. And I thank you all for your continuing practice, and for especially to Joa and João and Lisa for facilitating it and making it possible for all of you to come together at various times throughout the week and the day. It seems like a long time ago now when we had the idea to make this available, and I actually didn't participate in any of it until tonight. And I'm really, really grateful that you all maintained it and participated and supported each other, because it made it possible for everyone to therefore be connected and to maintain their practice. I will be honest with you, you know, I'm on the road to recovery, but I don't have a lot of energy. And so I don't know how long I will be able to stay on tonight. At this time of day, usually I'm not this active. So we'll see. But I really wanted to try to be present and share with you a little bit of what I've experienced, and hear whatever you would like to say as well. So today, when I was thinking about coming here tonight, I thought, what can I say to them? And I think really the only thing that I can say, and that I have maybe communicated to some of you, because it's been so present for me in these 5 weeks, actually, it's been now 5 weeks, is love. This experience for me was one of love. It still is one of love. It was a profound experience of vulnerability and humility. My own, in particular. And through that, the awareness of that of all of us. And what was born of that was this immense, deep wellspring of love for everyone, for the world, but even more so than that, a realization that we are that. We are love. There is nothing else. And all of the stupid stuff we do, you know, all of the mean things we do to each other and to ourselves, all of the silly preoccupations we have, all of the beautiful preoccupations we have, are all just attempts to express and receive, give and receive love. And this became clear to me as I lay in my bed. My worldview was limited pretty much to the window in my bedroom. And the entire wall of my bedroom is a window. And it's like a tree house because it's in the trees, it's high up. And so I could see my garden, part of it. I could see the garage parking lot next door. I could see the sky and the trees, and I could see my bedroom. But that was about it. And the more that I sat there, it was like when we delve into a deep retreat, things begin to quiet down. The more things are limited, you know, as our days are in a retreat, our activities, the more limited they became, the wider my panorama was, the more keenly I could see, the deeper I could see and feel and experience the world. And I found myself, I had no choice. At some point I had to let go. I had no choice but to just be sick, because I was very sick. I didn't realize that I was very sick, actually. It's only now that I look back at talking to my doctor, I realize I was really sick. And I had no choice but to be sick. You know, we have this koan, we say, you know, when it's cold, just be cold. When it's hot, just be hot. When you're sick, just be sick. Well, that's easy to say, right? But when confronted with it, when that is my actual experience, I had no choice. It was so powerful. And I was so powerless. And it was so full of uncertainty, because no one knows anything about this virus, really. No one knows how long it lasts. No one knows what the symptoms will be. Everybody's symptoms are different. There's no medication they can give you. It was total uncertainty. And of course, there were moments of fear, doubt, despair, depression, frustration, anger, lots of things. But the overriding experience was love. And the reason that I think I'm still trying to, you know, digest it all, is that becoming intimate with my situation, not moving away from it, but moving towards it, moving towards the sickness, the discomfort, the difficulty breathing, the fear, whatever I was feeling, the fatigue, great fatigue. By embracing it, by moving towards it, by being intimate with it, is where the love was, is, where the liberation is, where the deep compassion and wisdom is. And this, like I said, this wellspring of love, beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And some of you know that I talk about love sometimes, and that is something that is present for me. But I've never experienced it like this. And I realize that it's always there, because that's what we are. I had a great tenderness for the world. I would say I still do. I'm talking in past tense, because this is what arose for me when I was in my sickbed. And at one point I exchanged by, there were like 2 weeks there when I didn't speak. I was even it was like a silent retreat as well. I didn't even speak with my husband and son. I communicated with them by notes on a notepad because it was really tiring to speak and hurt my lungs to speak. And so I would, as most of you know, if you communicated with me, it was by email or text, so you didn't know that I wasn't speaking. But, I communicated with Roshi, my teacher, by text message as well. And at one point I was telling her about this experience that I was having of love, exactly what I'm telling you. And she wrote back, you know, and said, wow, you know, that's exactly it. And we exchanged about that. And then the next day she sent me a message and she said, you know, after our exchange, I'm thinking of changing the verse that we chant. Some of those of you who have rakusus, you have on the back of the rakusu the verse of the kesa, we call it. And it says, vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. In French, it's vast est la robe de libération, un champ de sans forme et ce champ de bienfait. So she wrote back to me and she said, after our exchange, I'm thinking of changing the verse to say a formless field of love instead of a formless field of benefaction. And I wrote back and I said, yes, that's it. That's it. Now, I don't think either one of us have changed. I don't know if she has. I haven't asked her yet, but I'm considering it. Now, we don't have to be sick to have this experience. It's just that being so ill is such a such an extreme situation, like any extreme situation. It's a plunge. I was forced to make this plunge. All of us have been plunged in the uncertainty and the doubt and the fear of this pandemic. And so we've had various realizations. I'm sure everyone has. It's been a great experience of interiority because all of us have lived, the entire world is experiencing this situation, both in an intimate way, but also in a collective way. We can't avoid it because we're alone. Even if you're shut in, locked down, confined with other people, you know, members of your family, even if you're out working, some of you have to go out and work, I think. Maybe not. You're still alone with whatever it is that you're experiencing. And to some extent, we've all been put in the situation of things slowing down and the clarity that comes with that immobility, like we discover in sitting practice. And the more that we can just, like I said, I just had to let go and just be sick. The more that we can just let go of wanting it to be otherwise and just be with what it is, the deeper then we can, the more intimate we become with it. And the more contact we then have with our true nature, with the nature of all of us, the nature of being, the impermanence. Oddly enough, when I was lying there in my bed, day after day after day after day, that clarity of immobility heightened my awareness of impermanence. And this illness is so strange that it cycles all around. So some days would be okay, and then the next day, boom, it would be terrible again. And some moments of the day would be okay, and then another moment, I would have trouble breathing. So there were cycles to the illness, but there were also the cycles of the days, of the season. I in my bed, I witnessed spring emerge. Of the weather, some days it was sunny, there would be wind. I would watch the different angles of the sun. Sometimes it rained, not very much. And I never knew what would be. I never knew what the weather would be. I never knew exactly what the shadows would be like from the sun. I never knew what my symptoms would be. I never knew from moment to moment. And it was an extremely intimate experience of impermanence. And believe me, this, usually we think of impermanence as being something difficult and unsettling. For me, it was a great comfort because I knew that whatever it was would change. I was not going to be sick like this forever. I didn't know what I was going to be like. I didn't know where it was taking me, but I knew it wouldn't last one way or the other. And this was, oddly enough, a great comfort if I could let myself be intimate with it. As soon as I would start projecting, as soon as I would become separate from whatever it was, then it became difficult. And the fear or the anxiety or the despair, you know, I'll be honest, there were moments of great despair. And there were moments of wondering, you know, at a particularly bad moment, I said to my husband, I hope my body can handle this. You know, I hope it's strong enough to weather this because it was so intense. And yet, when I could let go of that and just be with what it was, then it was okay. And we all have this possibility to do this at every moment. I know this with certainty. And that's what our practice is about, actually. So I'm not sure if there's really anything else I want to say or can say. I really want to impress upon you the gratitude I have for all of you and for your practice and your presence and for supporting each other. I really want to share with you the love that I experience and that I feel for all of you and for our Sangha and our practice. And how important it has been for me to, some of you I've seen in interviews now in the past few days because I've started doing interviews again, and how powerfully I felt that love. I saw it on your faces, and it occurred to me that this was, just this afternoon it occurred to me, I went out for a walk. I've been out for a walk maybe 3 or 4 times now in the past week, or 10 days, let's say. Went out for a walk with my son, and I ran into my teacher, Gena Roshi, in the street. And we were both very happy to see each other, standing a meter and a half apart, and me with a mask on. And it suddenly became so clear to me that how special this is, the relationship we have with our teacher. And how it's such a wonderful, wonderful relationship for us to experience love. And how I was great, I'm grateful for her. And she's grateful for me to have that experience of love. And I thought, wow, even this experience of being sick, being here for you, it's like I'm a vehicle of love for you. For you to experience love. Of course, for me to experience love as well. But it's as if I've put my life at your service for that. If you experience nothing else, that's enough, really. Thank you. If you have any questions or you would like to share something, I would love to hear you as well. As long as I can still maintain my energy level and attention span.
Roshi?
Hmm?
How would you describe, what more can you say about the experience of being separate, the experience of being sick, and when it became more difficult, like you said.
Okay. I use this verb of moving toward, and I would say when I was, to use your term, separate, I was moving away from it. Instead of going in the same direction of the sickness, I was trying to go away from it, which is an entirely vain exercise because I couldn't go away from it. There's nothing but failure in that. And trying to be something other than what I am. And that's where suffering arises. So that's when I really would suffer, is when I was trying to go away from it, to resist it, to not be it, to wish that I could be out in the world with everyone else, or to feel sorry for myself and say, why me? Because I don't really know anyone else who is as sick as me. I heard of other people. I have a dear Dharma sister whose son died alone in a hospital in London, her only son. And so I could consider myself lucky. At the same time, I could consider myself unlucky. Why was I here in this profound illness and others were not? So that's what I mean by not being intimate with it. It was like putting it apart from me, trying to push it outside of me, rather than embracing it, rejecting it. Does that answer your question? Or yeah? Okay.
Thank you.
Make a question, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to see you back. Ah, you are there. in that love of yours, maybe it's something crazy what I'm asking you, but in that love of yours, COVID was in it, the virus.
Well. It could, it's impossible for it not to be. It's all one. So, it doesn't make any sense. And I have great, I'm embarrassed and I'm very humble. To recall a response I gave to someone's question 6 weeks ago when they asked me if I was walking down the street and I saw the virus coming towards me, what would I do? And what I said was true at the moment, but it was very conceptual. I said something similar to what I'm saying now. It's all one, it's not outside of me. But I say, I'm humbled by my ignorance at the time. And at the same time, I have compassion for that's what it was at the moment. So now I say something similar, but now it's really, that's what my experience is. Mm-hmm. And because as someone, as Thelma even wrote to me or said to me, the virus is a passenger in your body. It's just passing through, but it's here. It was here. I mean, I don't think it's here anymore. In fact, I'm quite sure it's not. Now I'm just in the process of recovery, but it is still here. It is me. It is us.
So it was more than your teacher.
I would say it was my teacher. It is my teacher. It is our teacher. Everything is my teacher. Everything. So I can't say it was more than.
Thanks. Anna, you wanted to say something?
Hi, I'm Anna Maria, and I'm totally new to all of you except for Inish, who's my friend. So thanks for having me. I was just wondering if you feel in a way that this experience with COVID, since it's such a collective experience, if in a way it helped you feeling a sense of connection collectively, so between you and your experience on Earth that is tested in an extreme situation like illness or lack of security, with the rest of so it's maybe a trigger of that connection. So how do you see that? If you felt that this was actually a highway to that connection, to a collective connection.
Yes, thank you. Good question, and that's exactly it. When I talk about this love, it was just this overwhelming feeling of being one with everyone. And oddly enough, it kind of passed through in the garage lot behind my house. There was a family, two young children and their parents, who came out twice a day to play, kick the ball around, jump rope, run around, whatever. And so they, that family, my own family, my son and my husband, and my neighbors, who happened to be my teacher and a couple of Zen students, were really my only visual contact with others. But through them, it was as if they were the whole world. And the love that I felt for them, the neighbor children, the people in the garage lot, I don't know them, I've never seen them before. In all the years I've lived here, strangely enough. And yet, they were so familiar, as were everyone. All the people who clapped at night, I could hear that. I checked the news sometimes, people writing to me, reading the newspapers. Everyone, yeah. The entire world, I felt one with. I still do. I say this past again because I'm talking about that experience, but I do feel one with, yes, a deep connection with this experience we're sharing intimately, each one of us, collectively.
Amy, can I ask you a question?
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit more about the idea of moving into or moving toward the difficulty? And it's an active thing. You actively decide to move toward, or you, is it? I'll tell you what propels my answer. My question is that often when I try to do that and there's a sense of relief, it's almost like I feel like I'm giving up, or I'm just sort of giving into something, and maybe I don't know if my question is clear. But,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think this is a question we all have. It's the classic Zen conundrum of, you know, do you make effort or not effort? If you make effort, you go away from it. And if you don't make any effort, nothing will happen, right? So just to stick with my experience of being sick, I'd say that it's because it's very concrete and maybe vivid. It's more like a shift than an active decision. You know, it's kind of a settling into of the resistance eventually giving up, not you giving up so much, but it's like a shift in presence and awareness, maybe something. I know this example I often give, before I used to give, was when I was giving birth and my teacher was there, and she told me, in terms of the labor pains, which is very intense, she said, go in the same direction as the pain. And that was a life-changing moment for me. Of course, it changed the way that I experienced childbirth, but it also was life-changing. Yet it's something I have to remember over and over again. But it was like this with the sickness too, although I wasn't thinking of it. It's like going in the same direction, not moving away from it. That means you have to really stay with it, whatever it is. So if it's an emotion, a sensation, an overall bodily experience of being sick, you know, it means you have to really you have to stay with it, not run away from it. And give it space. Don't become identified with it, because if we become identified with it, then it's like we're going towards it not in a healthy way, but in a grasping way, let's say. So we need to stay with it and at the same time have a step back from it and see that it's not you. At the same time, it is you. So it really involves a shift in awareness and in presence, maybe something like that. I know it sounds very conceptual, but you can try it with when you're sitting or something and your knee hurts, or can try it when you become frustrated because you broke your favorite wine glass or something. You know, you can take really just basic stuff that assaults you and that you don't want to experience. Or that you do want to experience and you want to hang on to. Because the same thing applies. It looks like Tomas is trying to talk. He's muted, I guess, huh?
You're not anymore, Tomas.
Okay. So this is Tomas. Very good to see you again.
You have to turn up the sound. Turn it up.
Yeah.
can you speak it? Yeah, speak louder.
Yeah, so close and relatable. And I recall that in one of our last exchanges, we were, it came about the, this book, In Love with the World, and that you mentioned, and I've read it since, and it's almost like I see a lot of that everywhere, and I see it also in some of your words, and just wondering if you also had or explored during this period this this dying of roles, of identity, and I guess and the love that lies on the other side. So just know if you would like to say a few words from that perspective. Thank you.
Okay, maybe I'll repeat the question because maybe some of you didn't hear it so well. He said that in one of our last interviews that we had before I became sick and could no longer speak, we had discussed this book by Mingyur Rinpoche, In Love with the World, in which he tells of his own, he leaves his monastery. He's a very well-known, worldwide-known Tibetan master, and he leaves his monastery in the dark of night. No one knows where he went, and he wanted to disappear, and he did for 4 years. But very early on, he became very, very ill, gravely ill, and nearly died. And he tells of that in the book. And so Tomas was asking if, in my experience of that I went through, was there any similarity to Mingyur's experience of dying to his role, to his identity, to the world as he had known it. Mingyur's practice and experience is far beyond mine. I would never pretend to be at his level. However, I know his experience. When I read the book, I knew his experience, recognizing some of his experience as my own. Although he takes it to a level that is beyond me. And that's okay. I'm not belittling myself or making him into this great thing. It's just a fact that he's in a different place than me. And yet we share that same experience. So I would say that, yes, Tomas, some of what I experienced was similar to that. And we both came to that same experience of love, all-encompassing, profound love. I think for him, his identity is so extreme, in not that he's attached to it in such an extreme way, but because he was such a prominent worldwide teacher with thousands and thousands and thousands of followers, and the head of, you know, several big monasteries, and a monk who is, his identity is so linked with his clothing and his visual appearance. And he had never bought a train ticket by himself before. And he was like 34 years old or something. That's not my story. So I think the identities that I had to let go of and that dropped off for me were not necessarily the same as his. And yet at the same time, when I talk about this deep humility that I experienced, it's because I experienced no one special, nothing special. Nobody. I experienced nobody. And that's what then gave rise to this love. And that's this deep humility that I spoke of. So thank you. It's a beautiful book, if anyone, if you're interested. It's a really beautiful book. Somebody should translate it to Portuguese, actually. Yeah.
Amy?
Hello, Adalto.
Hello. The book you were talking about, there is in Portuguese. Already read it also.
Ah, okay, good.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Very good. What's the title in Portuguese?
I don't know. I don't remember. But it's not the same, I think, in English. I think it's not the same.
Mm.
Okay. Some as right, love the world.
Oh, yeah.
I think as someone right.
Yeah. Amor ao mundo.
Right now. Okay. Yes. Nice. Is a great book, yes.
Okay, well, I'm kind of fading here. So I will have to leave you, I'm sorry. Thank you, everyone.